The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the golden age of radio, the thrilling adventures of Tarzan of the Apes from 1932, and a story from the circus with the Maneater of Burma on the Clyde Beatty Show from 1950. Stay tuned for the golden age of radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, a story from the circus with the Maneater of Burma on the Clyde Beatty Show from 1950. Right now, the thrilling adventures of Tarzan of the Apes from 1932 as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Again, we bring you another chapter of Edgar Rice Burroughs' amazing history of Tarzan of the Apes. The astounding record of a superman who became the master of beasts and the mighty monarch of the African jungle. By the grace of a kindly God and the tender care of Kayla, at whose breast the little son of Lord and Lady Greystoke was nourished, Tarzan grew to young manhood. From his natural parents, he had inherited fineness and intelligence. And from his foster mother, Kayla, and the ape tribe, he had acquired tremendous strength, amazing agility, and animal cunning. And some 20 years since his abduction, we find Tarzan swinging through the jungles, a young man, splendid both in his youth and manhood. Carelessly, Tarzan's body swings from branch to branch. There's an easy grace about his perilous leaps and accurate catches as he progresses from limb to limb, which suggests both the assurance of the ape and the flowing rhythmic grace of a trained trapeze artist executing an often rehearsed feat of daring. Tarzan is off on a holiday. He's returning to the one place in the entire jungle that is his own, a place he had discovered long ago, a tiny hut on the shore of the great water. It has taken him many years to learn how to manipulate the odd mechanical thing which had swung open to him the door of that hut, which he would have been surprised to learn was the home of his mother and father, and his birthplace. However, the door of that hut had opened to him more than the interior of the rude cabin which Lord Greystoke had built for his wife and son. It had taught him that he was M-A-N, not an A-P-E. It had taught him to read and write after a fashion. For hour after hour, year after year, he had pored over the first primer which he found there. But perhaps more important to his physical being and survival, it had given him access to the hunting knife which hung at his side and the locket which dangled from his throat. Occasionally, Tarzan left the ape tribe and ventured to his hut near the seashore, and now he's making his way there. It's late afternoon. The sun of a dying day is filtering through the dank foliage of the trees to make an intricate pattern of onyx and gold on the spongy mold on the ground beneath. The jungle is reverberant with sound. The chatter of monkeys, the singing of birds, and the occasional growling and snarling of the larger animals as they make their imperial way to the waterhole. Tarzan is happy. Happy as a schoolboy on a holiday. Swinging along his tireless arboreal way, he inhales the dank, pungent smell of the jungle with boyish delight. And the grim grandeur, the poisonous beauty of the jungle fills his soul with a feeling for which the ape language has no name. Meanwhile, off the West African coast, a small tramp steamer is plying her way through a placid sea. In the tiny salon of the ship are four people. Professor Porter, an old savant who exists in the present but lives in the archaeological past, his daughter Jane, a beautiful girl whose charm is not only that of beauty but of wholesome loveliness and intelligence. Of these charms, the young man of the group is fully aware. He is William Cecil Clayton, a young Englishman, typical of the blonde, blue-eyed Oxford gentleman, and eldest son of Lord Greystoke. The other man in the salon is the captain of the ship.
What are you reading, Father?
Yes, of course, my dear, of course.
I asked you what you were reading.
Oh, sorry. A book, Jane. One of those dusty ones that you persist in believing gives me my hay fever. It's called Africa Christiana. Morchilli wrote it in 1816.
Only 1816? That's rather current fiction for you, isn't it?
Well, a man ought to keep up with modern literature, or he's liable to become an old fogey. Clayton?
I suppose anything published after the flood would be considered rather modern by an archaeologist, wouldn't it, Professor Porter?
Yes. No. What did you say?
Oh, go on with your reading, Father. We won't disturb you anymore. We're almost there, aren't we, Captain Tracy?
I beg your pardon.
Well, honestly, I don't know which is the worst, you or Father. It's enough to give a person an inferiority complex. I'm the only one aboard that seems to find me most fascinating.
Then you're forgetting me, aren't you?
Well, one could never forget anyone so gallant. But really, Captain, a person would think that you were burdened down with all the worries of the world.
Not all of them, Miss Porter, but I'm afraid I have my share.
Oh, really? What?
Merely a matter of ship's discipline. Nothing really important, I hope.
Beg pardon, sir, but I'd like to see you, sir.
What kind of discipline is this, Newton? Coming in without knocking. Take off your cap.
Yes, sir. Sorry, me lady.
Well, what is it? What is it?
I'm afraid, sir, don't ever let them know I told you, sir. They'd skin me alive. That's what they do, sir. They'd skin me alive. The blighter.
What are you talking about?
Mutiny, sir. Down below deck, sir. They're all in the forecastle, sir.
Mutiny? Mutiny? Isn't there some law about that?
Mutiny, I smelled it coming. That rotten crew we shipped at Sed. My compliments to Mr. Yount, Newton. And tell him to report to me at once. Here. I'll batter those deck guys down in their hats and scuttle them like rats.
Beg pardon, sir, but it's the first mate Yount that's leading the mutiny, sir. He's down in the glory hole talking to him now, sir.
Oh, he is.
Is there anything I can do, sir?
Don't worry, Clayton. I'll clean this affair up in a minute. You keep Miss Porter and the professor from being frightened.
I'm not at all frightened.
Beg pardon, sir. I'd better get below before they miss me. They'd kill me if they knew I'd informed you, sir.
All right, Newton. I'll remember this. Go below, then, and save your skin.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Clayton, we'll find two automatics in the drawer of that desk. You'll take one and come with me.
Certainly.
What am I going to use?
Good Lord. It's Newton. Come on, Clayton.
Righto.
What's the matter? Is the door stuck?
Just nothing. We're barred in.
While the voyagers from the world outside are at the mercy of a mutinous crew, miles away, Tarzan is hanging from a tree branch, overlooking a clearing in the forest, and sees the beginning of a jungle tragedy. Sabor the lioness is dozing, surrounded by her happy family. One of her cubs wanders beneath the tree that hides Hista, the snake, the silent, strangling horror of the jungle. Hista, hungry and alert, drops part of her great and snarling length down from the branch, encircles the cub, draws it up into the tree to slowly force it down into a constricting being by the undulating, torturous contraction of those great ringed muscles. Sabor, the lioness, awakes to the danger with a snarl of mingled rage and anguish, hurls herself with a terrific leap to rescue her cub. She misses. Again and again she leaps in a frantic effort to reach the snake. Her roar shreds the chaotic monotone of the jungle into tatters. Sabor's bestial anguish moves Tarzan to pity. He falls forward, giving himself a tremendous impetus with his legs and catapults himself through the air. It's a tremendous leap, superhuman. He's leaping for the end of Hista's tail. If he makes it, he may not be able to cling to that slimy, lashing length and will fall to the infuriated beast below. He won't make it. He won't. He does. He slips. He slips. He holds. His weight nearly jerks Hista loose from the branch. Like lightning, Hista contracts to lash him to the ground. But Tarzan lets go, drops to the branch beneath. Grasping it just in time, he falls fast. He dangles for a brief moment, but just for a moment. A snarl warns him. He's hanging close enough to the ground to be in reach of Sabor's vicious leaps. He pulls himself up to the branch. The tip of one of Sabor's claws cuts a tiny gash in his heel. He stands on the branch, gathers himself for a leap. Oh! Hista's sinuous body slaps itself around his waist, tightens, then slowly commences to draw him up to the branch above, where it can hold him fast against the branch and exert the terrific pressure which will crush him. Tarzan struggles terrifically, but slowly, slowly feels himself being drawn. Tarzan's mind races. With a great effort, he unwinds the grass rope around his waist, snatches the long hunting knife from its sheath, and plunges it into the narrow part of the reptile's tail. The snake writhes, but doesn't lose its hold. Hastily, Tarzan works the blade through the resisting muscular strength until the handle protrudes at one end and the blade at the other. The serpent's agony has caused it to lose the distance it's gained in drawing Tarzan to the branch on which it lies. Tarzan is on the level with the branch from which he's drawn. Hurriedly, he ties the rope above the knife, letting it slide down the snake's body until the knife keeps it from slipping. Then, rushing like a madman, he snubs the rope around the branch, hits the strings. The branch creaks ominously, but doesn't break. The pain of pulling against the knife in his body makes Hister slowly release its hold on Tarzan. Unable to let go of the branch above and secure to the one below, the great serpent is all but powerless. Its body is stretched up almost straight. Its dreadful leverage is gone. Tarzan climbs up the trunk of the tree, gains the upper branch. The cub is still struggling feebly. Tarzan, still clinging to the tree, extends his legs out, locks them around the branch and hits his neck in what is known in wrestling as a scissors. He applies the pressure of those powerful legs. Harder, harder, harder. Pulling the lion cub from the mouth of the reptile with one free hand. Hister's great mouth opens wider and wider. No longer eager to keep her prey, only anxious to escape the pressure of those powerful legs. The cub is free. Tarzan swings down, drops the cub gently on the ground and up again on the branch before Sabor can hurl herself upon him. Sabor, seeing her cub restored, pounces upon it, licking it, turning it over gently, worried. The cub recovers its breath and whimpers. Convinced that her offspring is safe, Sabor turns her attention to the thing up in the tree. Tarzan sits panting. Strange that after his good deed, Sabor should be anxious. However, undismayed, Tarzan looks down into the baleful eyes and snarling face of Sabor. There's an ominous creak, a splintering. The limb under Tarzan has given way. He's falling, falling into the merciless fangs and terrible claws of Sabor. He grasps a small branch. It breaks. Tarzan plunges downward, downward, falling to the ground. He strikes the ground. On his head and shoulder, he lies still, unconscious.
Tarzan lies unconscious on the ground. Sabor sees a lithe, hairless body innate and motionless before her. Crouching, snarling, her lean haunches gather beneath her. Her back arches with a spring. Her jaws gaping to reveal her yellow fangs. Merciless hatred for the thing which lies so helpless in front of her, gleams from her baleful yellowish eyes. Poised, tense, crouched for the leap, the lioness waits for some movement, some motion which will send her hurling upon her victim. There is a moment of silence, a tense moment, a moment in which furious death waits to execute its grim mission. Poised, waiting. Slowly, Sabor's animal brain connects the presence of her cub with Tarzan. Hister was devouring the cub. Tarzan fought Hister. The cub is safe. Slowly, suspiciously, the great beast relaxes. The hair on her short mane gradually lies down, and her tensed haunches straighten. Slowly, very slowly, she advances toward Tarzan's limp body. Snarling deep in her throat, she stops. Showing this strange creature lying so still before her, the deference of fear. Cautious, ever ready to crush the life out of the thing with a mighty paw should it move, she advances closer and closer, step by step. Her sharp, pungent breath is hot on Tarzan's neck. Sabor sniffs. The thing has a strange scent. Not the scent of an ape. Sabor is puzzled. Tarzan stirs. Groans a little in his unconsciousness. Sabor leaps back, snarling, her powerful paw raised to crush the head of that strange creature. Slowly, she puts her foot back on the ground, circles Tarzan, and without further ado, trots away, urging her cubs before her. Sabor, the merciless killer, the feared, the dreaded, Sabor the beast, has learned gratitude. Tarzan lies unconscious. The fall would have been sufficient to kill an ordinary man, but Tarzan breathes. The jungle sun sinks lower and lower. Suddenly there is no day. A dank, steaming mist arises from the ground and drifts in great clouds through the forest, like ghosts of massive monsters returned from some primitive jungle of eons before. Tarzan still does not move. He lies easy prey to the savage beasts of the jungle, the deadly insects, the sleeping leopard, the murderous gorillas, and worst of all, the snake, Hista, the silent, cold, crushing, slithering death. The moon comes up, making the jungle a wilderness of tall shadows, growing in a myriad of puddles of moonlight. The jungle becomes replete with sound, the whimpering cry of the lemurs, the weird laughter of the hyenas at the waterhole, the roar of Numa, the lion, walking in imperial disdain, heralding his approach to the waterhole. A cold, dead weight is slowly coiling itself around Tarzan's body. Its heavy, gliding pressure stirs him. With a growl of anger, Tarzan regains consciousness. The small steamer, bearing our passengers and the mutinous crew, steams down the golden path laid by the moon, off the sea, on the West African coast. The same moon which shines down upon the inert Tarzan, his cousin Clayton could see if he chose to look through a porthole of the ship's salon. How closely related, and yet how far removed these two. Tarzan, the ape man, and William Cecil Clayton. The four in the salon, Jane and Professor Porter, Clayton and the captain, discovered that they're locked in. The crew is mutinied. Newton, the seaman, has informed the captain. Newton leaves. A scream is heard. It's his. Grabbing the two automatics, the captain and Clayton rush to the door. It's locked.
We're barred in.
No, what are they doing to that poor man?
There, there, dear. Everything will be all right.
I'm afraid it won't be all right. This is mutiny. We can't stand here and let them torture that man this way. Open the door. Open it, you hear that? I won't stop it. I can't stand here and listen to that. I'm going to try and shoot the latch.
Mr. Clayton.
We'll do nothing of the sort. I'm captain here, and as long as I am captain, I'll be obeyed. Understand that. We have a devilish grave situation. This is mutiny. If I can get them to open that door of their own will, we have a chance. If I can't, we're better off in here.
I'd suggest, Mr. Clayton, that you leave the matter entirely in the captain's hands.
Oh, sorry, Captain. Not at all. Miss Porter.
Yes, Captain.
You will find in the top drawer of my desk a small jade-green bottle. Its contents are deadly. I hope it proves to be a souvenir of an unsuccessful mutiny.
You don't think, Captain, that it would be necessary?
This crew is the scum of Port Said. And Port Said, my dear Clayton, well, you've seen it.
I found the bottle, Captain. Thank you.
Isn't there some way that we can placate these mutineers, Captain? If it's money, why, I have a little...
And I have a great deal. See if you can buy them off.
If they take the ship, everything on it is theirs anyway. Yaunt, my first mate, is in back of this, and Yaunt is no fool.
Rather an intelligent fellow, in fact. I've had several conversations with him. Seems rather interested in archaeology.
You stand away from the door, Miss Porter. Thank you. Mr. Yaunt! Mr. Yaunt, do you hear me? Yaunt!
Yeah, I heard you, Captain.
Come here and unlock this door.
And get shut down. Oh, thank you, Captain. Throw those two automatics. They're in your desk out the port first.
Are you presuming to order me, Mr. Yaunt? You'll lose your papers for this.
My papers? You're on the high seas now, Skipper. Not at the Admiralty. My papers? They've been changed, Tracy. They're captain's papers now.
You're mad. This is mutiny. Do you realize what that means?
Yes, and you'd better realize, too. Throw out those automatics on the deck. I'm not asking you. I'm telling you.
And I'm telling you, Mr. Yaunt, that I'll see this ship run aground in Hades before I'll take orders from you.
Yeah? Well, we'll quit the bloody arms off of your nosy man, Newton, here, and throw him over the side. If those guns aren't thrown out on the deck in exactly 1 minute.
Oh! Throw him out, sir! Throw him out, please! Just throw him out! Oh, Captain, throw them out, please! Please, please throw them out!
There goes mine.
All right. Now, where's the other one?
Well, I guess they've got us there. Did you take the clip out of that automatic before you chucked it out, Clayton?
No, I didn't.
Not very clever of you. Well, here goes.
You're learning to take orders readily, Captain.
Come in here.
Oh, I just happened to think. Quick, Father, give me that map.
Why, yes. Where did I... why, here it is.
Daniel. You engage, watch this door. If
Either the ex-captain or any of his passengers
starting
to
leave. Well, Tracy, it seems...
You're a dirty cad, you.
Shut up, Clayton.
I won't shut up. What?
You kill Clayton.
Stand back there, all of you. We're all stark blasting. That's just to show you how this ship is going to be run from now on. Only next time, I'll use the business end and not the butt of the gun.
I wouldn't be surprised if you'd killed him, Yonks.
It doesn't make a great deal of difference, Tracy.
Not to you, it doesn't. They hang them just as high for mutiny as they do for murder.
Not when there aren't any witnesses.
You don't mean...
That there won't be any witnesses? Yes.
Tarzan regains consciousness. A sinewy thing of all muscle is wrapping itself around him, slowly encircling him. He voices the ferocious cry of a battling beast. The contracting length wound around him tightens. Tarzan struggles. Then suddenly he feels himself lifted high in the air. Another moment, and he finds himself safe on the broad back of Tantor the elephant. Tantor, his friend. Despite his aching head, Tarzan gives a call of triumph. Tantor, the great beast of the jungle, whom even Sabor fears, hears the call of his friend. The wise beast knows that all is well with the white ape upon his back. Tantor is happy too, for Tarzan is dearer to Tantor than all else in the world. A strange jungle friendship, as strong as it is odd. Tantor throws back his great trunk and trumpets to tell the fastness of the whole forest and its denizens that the mighty Tantor and his friend Tarzan are passing on their way. Let all beware. Tarzan feels himself all over gingerly and then shrugs. Nearness to death is life, not adventure in the jungle. Guiding Tantor by kicking him behind the ear, Tarzan directs the great beast to the seashore and his cabin. Tantor sways along his way at a speed which is almost unbelievable for so clumsy an appearance, tearing up the trees and brush which impede his way. Then Tarzan hears the beating of the surf, and in a few minutes they come out of the jungle onto the beach. A strip of white sand, a sea of darkness divided by golden bands. Tarzan looks down the path of the moon on the water. He gasps, a boat. That means men. Tarzan the ape thrills, because he sees in them that which he most wants to be, man. Tarzan the man.
Hunter Harry is the boy of five. He brings wild animals back alive. He can capture lions, cause he knows he's got go power from Cheerios. Yes, he's got go power.
There he goes.
He's feeling his Cheerios. Cheerios. Cheerios.
That's a mighty good idea for you. Just make sure you eat a big bowl of Cheerios and milk every breakfast, and you'll get go power too. Because a Cheerios breakfast is loaded with proteins, vitamins, and minerals. The very things that help build healthy bodies, strong bones, good red blood and muscles. Why, they'd be the sort of breakfast you'd go for even if they didn't taste so good. And they do taste delicious. Cheerios are a real oat cereal already cooked, with that delicious toasted oat flavor. So that's for you. Swell-tasting Cheerios and milk for Go Power. Eat them every morning and you'll hear...
He's feeling his Cheerios.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio with Tarzan of the Apes from 1932. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s when the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Right now, a story from the circus with the Man-Eater of Burma on the Clyde Beatty Show from 1950 as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
The Clyde Beatty Show. Greatest wild animal trainer, Clyde Beatty, with an exciting adventure from his brilliant career. The circus means thrills, excitement, snarling jungle beasts. The circus means fun for young folks and old. But under the big top, you see only a part of the story. The real drama comes behind the scenes, where 500 people live as one family, where Clyde Beatty constantly risks death in the most dangerous act on earth. This master of the big cats has journeyed to Africa and India, hunting down his beasts in their native jungle. All of this is part of the Clyde Beatty story. It is entitled, Man-Eater of Burma. Many men find the routine of their business often becomes boring, leading them to seek excitement in other fields. But when a man's business is wild animals, excitement, danger, and adventure are everyday occurrences. One such adventure for Clyde Beatty started in far-off Rangoon, Burma, a couple of years before the war.
Yes, Harriet and I and our business manager, Phil Donovan, were stopping over in Rangoon en route to the province of Bengal, India, where we were hoping to capture some young tigers. We disembarked from a small coastal steamer, and an ancient taxi finally transported us safely to the center of Rangoon.
This is Strand Hotel, sir.
Come on, Harriet. Phil, this is as far as we go for now. How much, driver?
4 rupees, sir.
Here you are. See that the bearer brings in our bags, will you?
Salaam, sir. It will be so.
All right, folks, let's go in.
So this is the Strand Hotel. The way you've been talking, Clyde, I expected something like the Waldorf.
I just hope they have a bathtub in the place.
Oh, I can promise that, all right.
I wish you could promise some air conditioning, too.
I'm afraid that's out of the question. I'll tell you what, our bags won't be in for a minute. Let's go right in the lounge here and have a tall, cool lime or something. We can register later.
Mr. Beatty, that's a wonderful idea.
Well, what are we waiting for? Let's go.
Ah, looks like the tea time business is still good.
No, my eyes weren't deceiving me. Beatty, you rascal, it's good to see you again.
Sanders, I was wondering if you were still around. How have you been?
First rate, thanks. And you?
Oh, fine. Excuse me, Harriet, this is Elliot Sanders, manager of the Imperial Teak Company. My wife, Harriet Sanders.
I'm delighted, Mrs. Beatty.
How do you do, Mr. Sanders?
And our friend Phil Donovan, Elliot Sanders.
Glad to meet you.
Thank you. I say, may I buy you all a drink?
Well, thanks, Sanders. Sit down. We're just about to order something cool.
Waiter?
Limes all around?
Fine.
Mm-hmm. That'll be four, waiter.
Yes,
sir. This is like old times.
I thought I must be seeing things when you walked in, Beatty. What brings you to Rangoon?
Why, we're just stopping over for a couple of days on our way to Bengal. Going to try and round up some young tigers.
I see.
Why so thoughtful, Mr. Sanders?
I was just thinking. Why go all the way to Bengal for tigers? We've got more than enough of the blasted things right here in Burma. As a matter of fact, our teak plantation up near Tangu has had quite a plague with one in particular.
Really? What's the trouble?
Whitley, our foreman up there, reports that there's a giant tiger on the rampage in that district. Says it's the biggest the natives have ever seen. Only not many of them have lived to tell about it. You see, he's turned man-eater.
Well, why doesn't somebody shoot it?
I can see that you've never hunted a man-eater, Mr. Donovan. They've tried to shoot it, but so far I haven't had much luck. Maybe you'd like to have a crack at it, Beatty.
I'm afraid that's a bit out of my line. You see, we're after young tigers for our circus, and our time's getting short.
You know, this tiger has so disturbed work at the plantation, killing natives, that...
What's on your mind, Sanders?
Well, supposing I were to authorize my plantation foreman to turn over all the natives and equipment you might need for capturing a dozen young tigers at no cost to you, whatever. What would you say to that?
Why, I'd say there's a catch in it somewhere.
There is. First, you'd have to rid the place of that man-eater. How about it?
I'll have to check with the boss. What do you say, Harriet?
When do we start?
Looks like you've made yourself a deal, Sanders.
Good. There's a riverboat going upstream in the morning. I'll go and arrange everything and send word to Whitley. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'll see you a bit later on, eh?
Nice to meet you.
Right, Sanders.
Bye, Miss Sanders. Well, things happen fast in the Orient, don't they? Just like that, a tiger's death warrant is signed.
Clyde, what does that faraway look mean?
I was just thinking, if that tiger's as big as they say...
You're not thinking
exactly.
Of...
Exactly. I'm not signing his death warrant. I'm going to take him alive.
We will continue with Maneater from Burma in just a moment.
Welcome, William Bendix.
Nobody can act up to par with a nasty cold. I check my cold distress the fast way, with Four-Way cold tablets.
Yes, tests of four leading cold tablets proved Four-Way fastest acting of all. Amazing Four-Way starts in minutes to relieve aches, pains, headache, reduce fever, calm upset stomach, also overcomes irregularity.
Four-Way is the fast way to relieve those cold miseries. Then you feel better quickly.
Four-Way cold tablets, only 29 and 59 cents.
And now, back to the Clyde Beatty Show and the thrilling adventure, Maneater from Burma. Clyde and Harriet Beatty, accompanied by their friend Phil Donovan, are in Burma, en route to India in search of young tigers. Elliot Sanders offers to turn over the resources of his company's teak plantation in central Burma to aid the hunt. If Clyde will first dispose of a giant man-eating tiger which has been plaguing the district. Clyde agrees to the plan, except instead of killing the tiger, he plans to capture it alive. Now, 2 days later, a small river steamer has just docked at Tungu on the Irrawaddy River.
Here comes the Chamber of Commerce, Clyde.
Oh, I'm glad somebody's here to meet us. I don't think I care to be stranded here for long.
It would be the Beatty's and Mr. Donovan.
Right, and you're Whitley?
Right again. I got word from Sanders that you'd be arriving today. Welcome to Tungu.
Well, thanks, Whitley.
Yeah, this almost calls for a celebration. It isn't often we see a beautiful woman up here in these parts, Mrs. Beatty.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Sanders tells me you're after tigers, Beatty.
Yes, that's why we came.
Well, you've certainly come to the right place. We can discuss that later, I guess. Well, now we'd better be on our way to the plantation.
How far is it?
Oh, it's only about 20 miles, but it's through the jungle most of the way. And I, for one, don't care to travel it after dark.
Yeah, that makes two of us. But don't tell me we have to walk 20 miles through the jungle.
Oh, good heavens, no. I have an auto of sorts. There's a trail, although it's a bit rough, I'm afraid.
Well, I guess we're ready when you are, Whitley.
Good. We'll have a bearer bring your bags and be off. In about 3 hours, you'll be able to get some rest. How does that sound?
Couldn't sound better. Let's go.
Just set their bags inside, Munga. Well, here we are. These bamboo bashes aren't much to look at, but I trust you'll be comfortable.
Why, it's perfect, Mr. Whitley. And so close to the edge of the jungle, too. I'm going to love it, I know.
If you ask me, it's too close to the edge.
Oh, I'm sure you won't be disturbed by anything, Mr. Donovan. Unless a monkey steals your shirt. Sometimes the little devils get quite bold. Well, I imagine you'd like to turn in now, wouldn't you?
Oh, I think we'd better. That tiger will keep till tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right. I'll arrange for all the elephants and mahouts and beaters you'll need in the morning.
Well, that won't be necessary, Whitley. All I'll want for the time being is one elephant and mahout. I would appreciate it if you'd have some of the natives make a big rattan net and an extra strong cage, though.
Net? Cage? Good heavens, man, you're surely not going to try and take that man-eater alive.
Why, yes, that's my intention. Any objections?
Well, no, I suppose not. Except I don't think you'd stand a chance of doing it. This is no ordinary tiger, Beatty. It'll weigh over 500 pounds. I've seen it.
I know. Sanders told me, and that's why I want it alive. Think of the attraction it'd make in the States. The biggest tiger in captivity. Man-eater from Burma.
Well, I suppose it's up to you, old man, and I wish you luck. I'll get some natives started on what you want first thing in the morning.
Thanks, Whitley. I'll see you then.
Well, it's almost finished, Beatty. That net ought to hold a bull elephant.
It looks perfect, but it'll have to be to hold him. How's the cage coming along?
Yeah, it's practically finished, too.
That's swell. Say, Whitley, what are those things some of the natives are wearing around their wrists?
Oh, those are supposed to protect them from the tiger or some such fool thing as that. They're a superstitious lot, you know. They're probably all convinced that if the one who was killed yesterday had been wearing one of those charms, he'd be alive today.
Well, let's hope we'll be able to make their charms unnecessary.
Yeah, let's hope so. By the way, just what is your plan?
Well, as soon as the net's finished, I want to go into the jungle near where the native was killed yesterday. We'll find a small clearing and set our snare. I'll need a live goat to bait it with, and I'd like to take along a couple of natives to build a machan in a tree nearby.
But why do you want a shooting platform?
I intend to spend the night watching for your man-eater. And if the snare doesn't work, then I'll shoot.
Well, you may have all the men or anything else you need. Oh, Bimmer! Come here a moment. Bimmer's our head, Mahout, best elephant man in Burma. He'll take you wherever you want to go and see that your wishes are carried out. He rules the natives with an iron fist.
You call, Sahib?
Yes, Bimmer. This is Beatty, Sahib. He's come to catch Big Tiger. I want Bimmer to stay with him and help, understand?
As you command, Sahib. But
no buts now. You'll do as I ask. See that he has all the help he needs. Do what he says to do.
Yes, Sahib.
Go now and put Howda on your left. Then fetch him here.
Very well, Sahib.
Harriet and Donovan are coming along, Whitley. Care to join us?
I'd like to, Beatty, but I've 100 other things I must do. I've been looking for you at tea time, though.
Fine, we should be back by then. That is, if we have any luck finding a clearing.
I never knew the jungle could be so green and beautiful. It almost seems unreal.
Oh, it's real enough, Harriet. It was very close to here that that native was killed yesterday. Oh. This clearing's just what we're looking for, too. All right, Bimmer. Stop him. Let us down.
As you wish, Sahib. Hi, Mocha.
Wait a second. I'll give you two a hand. All right. Hand me the rifle first, Phil.
Here you are.
Got it? Okay. Jump down now.
Oh, boy. Am I glad to get off that blamed elephant. I was beginning to get seasick.
All right, Bimmer. Tell the men to bring that net over here.
Yes, Clyde. Got up, Bimmer.
Now what do we do, Clyde?
Ah, now comes the interesting part. This is where we see if we can be more clever than our tiger. First, I'll have the men spread the net out right over there. We'll stake out the goat when we come back tonight.
And if the tiger goes after the goat, it'll spring the trap and snatch him up in the air in the net. Right?
That's the idea, Phil. I just hope something else doesn't come along and trip it. I want that big tiger.
Well, they've got the tree platform finished, Clyde. I must say, it doesn't look too comfortable, though.
Probably won't be either, but of course, you two don't have to come along tonight.
Oh, I was only kidding. You know, I wouldn't miss it for anything.
Yeah, me too, Clyde. This I gotta see, as long as it's from a safe spot.
Fair enough. Now let's get back to our basha at the plantation. Well, there we are. Old Faithful's ready for action.
Aren't you going to give Phil a rifle, too?
Oh, no. No, not me. I'd probably hit myself with it if I ever had to use it. You know, I get to asking myself sometimes, Donovan, what in blazes are you doing here in the middle of the Burma jungle?
What do you answer yourself?
That's just it. There isn't any answer. I must be nuts.
Maybe we all are. I think I'll rest for a minute, Clyde. I'm rather tired.
Oh, that's a good idea, Harriet. We've got a long night ahead. Wait a second. I'll get these gun cases off your bed.
Oh, never mind. I'll just lie on yours for a while.
I'm kind of tired, too. Must be this heat. You know, Harriet, if I were you, I
stop stammering, Phil. You'd what?
Clyde, look. The foot of the bed there.
Wait, Scott. It's a king cobra. Harriet, don't move a muscle and don't answer me. There's a cobra at the foot of your bed ready to strike. Don't move.
Return to Clyde Beatty after this message.
For the finest in sherries, remember this name. C-R-E-S-T-A. B-L-A-N-C-A. Cresta Blanca. Cresta Blanca. Yes, the famous California sherries of Cresta Blanca are among the great sherries of the world. And Cresta Blanca has created a sherry for every occasion, for every taste. Ask your wine dealer. Discover the ideal Cresta Blanca sherry for you. Chenley's Cresta Blanca Wine Company, Livermore, California.
And now back to Clyde Beatty and Maneater of Burma.
Deep in the jungle of Burma on a teak plantation, Clyde and Harriet Beatty and their friend Phil Donovan are resting before returning to the trap they have set for the giant man-eating tiger. In their basha, Harriet lay down on Clyde's bed, and immediately thereafter Phil sees something which makes his hair stand on end. There at the foot of the bed and ready to strike was a king cobra, deadliest of jungle snakes.
Clyde, what are we going to do? She makes a move, it'll kill her, sure.
She's been in tight spots before. She won't move. Steady, Harriet. Hand me that small rifle, Phil. Slowly.
Clyde, you're not going to try to shoot it. If you should miss...
It's her only chance, Phil. I can't afford to miss. Keep that rifle moving slowly.
I will. Got it?
Yeah. Thank heaven it's loaded. Stay still, Harriet.
Good grief, Clyde. Hurry up and shoot.
Take it easy, Phil. I don't dare make a sudden move. Quiet now.
You got him, Clyde. You got him.
Harriet, dear. It's all right now.
Oh, Clyde. That awful snake.
Oh. Now. It's all over. Now try and relax.
Holy smoke, Clyde. What a shot. He took his head clean
Phil,
off.
Phil, get a glass of water. Hurry.
Lady, what's the matter here? I heard shots.
We had a visitor, Whitley. Look on the floor there by the bed.
Great Scott, a cobra. Hey, he didn't strike anyone, did he?
Luckily, he didn't.
Here's the water, Harriet. Drink it down.
Thank you. I'm all right now.
Well, this is peculiar. I haven't seen a cobra around the plantation here in months. Look at the size of that fella.
Wait a minute, Whitley. Hold it over closer here.
Why? What's the matter?
You notice anything strange about him?
Why, no. Looks like any other cobra I've ever seen.
Hey, I think I see what you mean, Clyde. The skin along his sides looks sort of funny.
Exactly, as if he'd been rubbing up against something. And unless I miss my guess, that's just what he's been doing.
I don't follow you, Beatty.
This cobra didn't just wander in from the jungle, Whitley. It's been a captive in a box or basket for some time. And somebody that wanted to kill me must have put it on my bed.
Oh, come now, Beatty. Why should anyone around here want to kill you?
I wish I knew the answer to that, Whitley. And I intend to find out just as soon as we get back in the morning. All right, Bimmer. We're all set now. You go back to the plantation. Don't come after us until you hear shots.
As you wish, Tide. But it's useless to try kill Big Tiger.
Never mind that. You go back now. We've got to get up on our platform.
I go, Tide. Mokka! Jensen!
Boy, now I know what it is to feel alone. But no offense intended, of course.
Mm. It is a lonesome feeling here, isn't it?
Yeah. Yet I have a strange sensation of being watched.
Don't worry. We're probably being watched by half the animals in the jungle. I hope that tiger isn't one of them, though. Come on, let's get on up in the tree. I'll give you a boost, Harriet. There you go.
Come up. Need a hand, Phil?
Yeah. You don't have a ladder handy. thanks. Coming, Clyde?
Right behind you. Pull that rope up now, Phil. We don't want to leave our guns and canteen down there.
Right.
Oh, that poor little goat. I feel sorry for it.
Yeah, so do I. But it's better to sacrifice a goat than some more human beings.
Well, I guess we're all set now.
Look through the trees there. Did you ever see such a moon?
Nope, never did. And here sits Donovan, up a tree.
I think we'd better quiet down now. Make yourselves as comfortable as you can. It's liable to be a long night.
Well, what do you think, Clyde? It's 4 a.m.
I don't know. Maybe tonight's just not our night. Oh, let's wait another hour, though. Sun won't be up till then.
Maybe Bimmer was right. Maybe that tiger's too smart to be caught.
Oh, that's nonsense, Harriet. We may have to try something else if this trap doesn't work.
What was that?
That, my friend, was a tiger. And it sounded like an old one. Now be quiet. He may be heading this way.
I think the goat senses danger.
Boy, as
Sounds like he's just beyond the edge of the clearing.
He's coming, all right. Wait a minute. Look.
Jumping Jupiter, look at the size of him.
Shh, quiet, Phil.
Look, he's sneaking toward the goat.
Wow. There he goes.
I worked, Clyde. He's up in the net.
Yeah. I hope that net holds. He's even bigger than I dreamed.
Come on, let's take the flashlight and get a close-up look.
All right, slide on down, but keep your eyes open. Harriet, you wait till I'm down. Look out below, Phil.
Okay, come on.
Toss my rifle down, Harriet.
Here it comes.
Got it? All right, come on down. I'll grab you.
Oh, I can make it all right, I think. Where's Phil?
Well, he's right... Oh, he couldn't wait. There he goes. He's running over to...
Clyde, look. At the edge of the clearing. Phil, look out!
Good Lord, another tiger.
He's got the film. Can you see it, Clyde?
Clyde, help!
Stay back, Harriet.
Oh, thank goodness. You got him, Clyde.
Come on, Harriet. Stay behind me. Phil. Phil, are you all right?
I think so. If this brute had gone another 3 feet, he'd have fallen right on top of me.
Well, Beatty, my hat's off to you. Actually, I never thought you'd take that tiger dead or alive.
Oh, we were pretty lucky, Whitley. But he won't be bothering you anymore. From now on, he's my problem.
And you're welcome to him. Where's your wife and Donovan? Will they be along for lunch?
Oh, they ought to be here soon. They were just waking up when I left the Basha. But before I do anything else, I want to go down to the shed and have another look at that cat.
Can't that wait?
I'd rather do it now. I want to check that cage and make sure it's holding all right. Like to come along?
Yes, I might as well, I guess. Let's go. Not much doubt about which shed he's in.
Something's wrong, Whitley. Come on, let's hurry.
Well, what do you mean?
The way he's roaring. I'll bet my boots there's somebody near that cage. And I left orders for nobody to go in the shed.
You may be right. The gate's open here.
Wait a minute. Let me have a look. Whitley, one of the natives is fooling with the cage door. Hey, you, get away from there.
Why, it's Bimmer. Grab him, baby.
What's the rush?
Bimmer! Look out, he's got a knife.
Maybe that'll hold the sneaking hyena for a while.
Good work, Beatty. Bimmer, what the devil were you doing?
Bimmer, doing nothing, Sip.
You call that nothing? Look over there, Whitley. He was loosening the rattan on the cage door so the tiger'd be able to break out later on.
Here he comes now, Mrs. Beatty. I'm sure he can explain it better than I.
Well, I hope he can. The whole thing doesn't make sense to me.
Oh, we got the cage fixed, Whitley. I put a couple of your men to guarding it, although it's probably not necessary now with Bimmer locked up.
What's it all about, Clyde?
It's really quite simple. Remember those odd-looking charms some of the natives have been wearing around their wrists?
Well, sure, but what have they got to do with Bimmer?
Well, Bimmer, being Chief Mahout, was sort of the head man among the plantation natives. When this man-eating tiger went on the rampage, they looked to Bimmer for advice and protection. He took advantage of it by playing medicine man.
You mean he gave them the charms to protect them from the tiger?
No, that's just it. He sold them those charms. A couple of the natives I just talked to paid 10 rupees apiece for them. And to a native, 10 rupees is a small fortune.
I'll be. How do you like that? Shades of Chicago.
All this going on right under my very nose, and I knew nothing about it.
Well, Bimmer had everybody convinced that if they bought a charm from him, the tiger wouldn't touch them. But when we arrived and he found out we were either going to capture or kill it, well, he had visions of his business folding up.
And he tried to kill you to keep that from happening.
That's right. When that failed, the next best thing was to fix it so the tiger could escape.
I'm terribly sorry about all this, Beatty. I'm afraid your opinion of this plantation is probably pretty low. And I couldn't blame you a bit if you left immediately.
Left immediately? But, Whitley, you seem to forget. We have a dozen different reasons for not going yet.
A dozen reasons? What are you talking about?
I'm talking about tigers, Whitley, 12 of them. And we start hunting them right after lunch.
Clyde Beatty will be back in just a moment with an exciting preview of next week's adventure. But first, an important message.
Across the nation, communities and the parents of Boy Scouts are observing Boy Scout Week, agreeing with the boys themselves that adventure, that's scouting.
Here is Clyde Beatty with a preview of Tiger Escape.
Gracie was loose somewhere in the Shrine Temple. Yes, Gracie, 600 pounds of murderous tiger, and she was roaming a building where more than 200 defenseless guests lay sleeping. I'd reached the fifth and top floor of the Shrine Temple when Harriet caught up with me.
You haven't found her yet, Clyde?
No, thank heavens.
Thank heaven? What do you mean?
That means she must be up here, Harriet, above the sleeping rooms.
You mean in the dark, in there?
This stairway's a fire stairs. I've checked every floor from the basement up here to the fifth. All the other landings have one-way doors.
One-way doors?
The doors won't open from this stairwell into the temple proper. That stood us in luck.
Oh, you mean Gracie's had to come right up here to the top?
As if she'd been in the runway chute to the big performing cage in the show.
And in there, Clyde, what's in there?
I walked in the dark, leaving Harriet protected behind the door that opened outward into the landing. I saw that I was in the unfinished swimming pool of the temple. In the light that spread out from the door, there were tumbled concrete blocks, timbers, porcelain objects, and beyond the light, blackness, in which Gracie the Tigress was hiding.
You have just heard a preview from Tiger Escape, our next Clyde Beatty drama. Be sure to tune in for this thrilling incident that occurred in the city of Detroit. All stories are based upon incidents in the career of the world-famous Clyde Beatty and the Clyde Beatty Circus. The Clyde Beatty Show is produced by Shirley Thomas. Man-Eater of Burma was written by R.T. Smith. All names used were fictional, and any resemblance to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This is a Commodore production.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY with an episode of the Clyde Beatty Show from 1950. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel, on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.